If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this lovely Saturday. It's beautiful and sunny, and if you don't look at the ground and look at all that snow, you can almost believe it really is springtime. We're getting there, folks. We're getting there. Slowly but surely, even though the weather overnight and later today is kind of saying otherwise. All right, we got lots to do today on the Wintrust Business Lunch, as per usual. We're going to be talking a little bit about minimum wage, and we're going to be talking about gender pay equality. It's a big, big topic. Still, here in 2016, still a very big topic. But first, we have some stuff to talk about with the Chicago startup scene. There's a lot to it. There's a lot going on. Last week, we talked a little bit about some Chinese investment firms that were looking at U.S. products and companies for investment. But you know what? Let's take it even closer. And there's some stuff going on right here in Chicago with some foreign firms that it's really, really interesting. And so here to talk about that with us is Ali Marotti from the Chicago Tribune. Ali, welcome to the program.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. So talk us through what's going on. It seems like there's some investors that have their eye on the Chicago startup scene in particular, and the Chicago Innovation Exchange is trying to really facilitate some relationships there. Break it down for us a bit.
Yeah, so the Chicago Innovation Exchange at the University of Chicago started this partnership with a Chinese university in Qingdao last summer. This was about 9 months ago. And then in February, they facilitated a pitch competition that was regional. And there were four winners that were selected. And now they're in China competing for a total prize money of $130,000. And then the winner will also get a chance to open up an office there as well.
That's really, I mean, that's so huge for a young startup to be able to have that kind of opportunity, not only the funding, but to be able to put roots in a, you know, in a community overseas. That's so big. That's so huge. And I think, depending on what exact, you know, area they're working in, their startup is focused on, that could be so game changing to be able to do that.
Right. One of the companies, Audiovert, they're out of Northwestern. They're a really young company. They just got started. They've only gotten a couple thousand and really early investment money so far. And they're hoping, they're a hardware company, they make stereos. And they're hoping that even if they don't win the money over there, you know, they can sort of form some relationships that will help them with their manufacturing down the line.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's super, super interesting. But it's also, there's another beat to this, really, and that's all about this this new show that's all about Chicago's maker scene. Tell us about that, too.
Right. It's called America's Greatest Makers, and it's on TBS. And it premiered last Tuesday at 8 p.m., and so the next episode is this Tuesday. And that brings 24 teams from around the country, and they're competing for $1 million. And they have to use Intel's Curie, which is a tiny computer module that was made specifically for wearable devices. And so our team from Chicago, which is called Newton, pronounced Newton, but it's spelled N-W-T-N, they're making a concussion detection device. And they didn't actually appear on the first show, so we're hoping to see them this Tuesday. And, of course, they wouldn't tell me anything about what happened because they actually finished filming in March. So they know the outcome, but we aren't sure yet.
Sure, of course. We have to wait patiently like all the other viewers. Well, this is so,
right.
I mean, it's so interesting that the show, that TBS is looking to us because it seems like we're kind of having a moment and where it used to be the goal was to get started and get yourself to Silicon Valley, I think that has shifted a bit, and it seems like we're doing fine here. I mean, I think even 1871, early on, a lot of the startups we saw coming out of there, the goal was to get to the West Coast or get to the East Coast even. And it seems like, as with a lot of things, suddenly Chicago is holding its own, and people aren't looking to bail out of Chicago to go to a coast. They're looking to just keep thriving here.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of that has to do with where the investment money is coming from as well. And we're seeing a lot of programs coming out of universities that are helping and other places as well that are helping with the early stage funding. And that's the thing with the Chinese investments, too. You know, they're a little bit riskier, willing to take more chances with companies that might take longer to develop their product or might need more money to get going, like biotech companies and clean energy and things like that. And then, you know, just on Thursday, Northwestern announced a couple of new funds for students and faculty that can help get them off the ground too. So it's sort of bridging that gap between starting your business and actually being able to launch your product where people were having trouble before. And now I think there's a lot more resources around Chicago for people to do that.
Definitely. And there's, I think, a very crucial gap right there in that point. And at that point, because I think a lot of people feel they have to establish a certain amount of, you know, legitimacy or credibility or have a certain amount of, you know, track record before they try to seek funding. But it's really very heartening to see there's many different points to gain support. You know, I think it used to kind of be that you did a Kickstarter and then you'd have to wait and wing it yourself until you were really, really established and you could go in with big guns. But there really is a lot of, it seems like there's a lot going on in Chicago that closes that gap between the big venture capital firms and, you know, maxing out your credit cards and going to Kickstarter and things like that to get started.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And we're also seeing a lot of people, a lot of big corporations and companies that are partnering with startups and helping, giving them an opportunity to prototype their technology and sort of give it a test run and partnership with them, you know, like testing their technology in a large building or in a skyscraper or something like that. That's really helpful to them too, because if they can't give it a test run, then, you know, it's really hard for them to pitch their idea to investors. So we're seeing a lot of that out of Chicago as well.
Definitely. It seems like we're really, really, really thriving, especially around biotech. I think that's a lot of, you know, University of Chicago, we can thank them for that. But it seems like that's where we're really, really sailing the most. So it's going to be interesting to watch over the next couple of years how we continue to hold our own in the startup scene. All right. Ali Marotti from Chicago Tribune, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll love to have
you
back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we'd love to have you back again soon with more updates on this. But in the meantime, everybody, head to ChicagoTribune.com and check out these two stories about the show TBS Makers and the Chicago startups that are competing in China for global expansion. We'll be right back here in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this beautiful, almost spring day. It's thinking about it. The sun is out and it looks so beautiful outside, even though there's snow on the ground. If we ignore that snow, we can will it into being spring, I'm convinced. All right, my friends, still plenty to do here today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lots of topics to discuss. And, you know, a topic that's been in the news a lot lately has been the topic of minimum wage. There's a lot of discussion around that. And here to discuss that with us is Lydia DePillis from Washington Post. Hi, Lydia. Welcome back to the program.
Hi there.
Hi. All right. So there was a story just recently that you did for Washington Post all about some leaked documents that really show strong business support for raising the minimum wage, which was really, really interesting and certainly caught my eye because I think the popular narrative is that kind of this idea that business leaders tend to oppose it because it's going to, you know, change the cost structure in the budgeting for them. But in fact, these leaked documents suggest otherwise. Take us through that a bit.
Sure. So where this came from was the Association of State Chambers, which is an umbrella group that represents chambers of commerce in different states, commissioned a poll from a well-known consulting firm, Frank Luntz's group, Luntz Global, and they polled 1,000 business executives from businesses of varying sizes in every state, and they asked them a number of different questions, and one of them was about the minimum wage. And 80% of the respondents said that they would be okay with it going up in their states, and 12% were neutral, and 8% opposed it. And that's surprising because of that narrative you mentioned about businesses opposing minimum wage hikes. And there's a number of reasons why the poll came out that way. It probably, the major one is that most businesses don't pay people minimum wage. Their employees make more than that. So they're not going to be directly impacted if the minimum wage goes up a bit.
Right, right. That is, I think, a thing a lot of people forget when we're talking about minimum wage and we're talking about all the topics around this is that, in fact, that's not that a lot, yeah, as you said, plenty of businesses are not starting people out there. A lot of times they're starting at a different level, or maybe like a union scale or something like that. So indeed, there's a lot of factors. But, you know, as we're kind of reading through this, there was someone that you talked with that was in this story that was kind of suggesting, I think where this conversation gets derailed a lot. And that's when people kind of take it to well, there are bigger things to worry about. There are bigger priorities. We can't really worry about this. So, in that piece of it, I mean, valid, sure, there are many, many social ills to worry about. There are many, many topics, and we have to just put our passion where it speaks to us. But, where did that part resonate for you as far as, was it that this is kind of a topic they've moved on from and they're on to bigger, thinking about bigger topics, or is this really just kind of where does that fall in kind of in the priority for them?
So the other really interesting thing about this poll is the consultant's advice for businesses, for these chambers of commerce, on how to deal with the issue of minimum wage and the institutional behavior that sheds light on. Because often in states, almost always, the state chamber of commerce or the local chamber of commerce, and certainly the U.S. chamber of commerce nationally, are very opposed to minimum wage hikes. And so why is that the case? If, as this poll suggests, businesses on the whole don't care about it that much. Mm-hmm. And what people told me was that in these kinds of debates, the big businesses whose ox is being gored, like the restaurant and the hotel industries who employ a large percentage of the low-wage workforce, those are the ones whose voices are heard and whose interests chambers tend to protect. Because, truthfully, businesses don't mind seeing the minimum wage raised, but they're not going to go out and campaign for it. So they're not going to make a stink if their chamber is endorsing a position that they don't fully support, because there are other issues that they do care about more. If you're a small business, you're really, really concerned about schools and roads, taxes, regulatory burdens, those kinds of things. And so seeing that the minimum wage rate gets raised, even if you believe in it, it's not going to be on the top of your priority list. So what the consultant was telling these state chamber leaders is, look, we know that your constituency doesn't oppose minimum wages that much, but you can diffuse support for minimum wage increases by asking people, well, shouldn't we be doing something else, like supporting the earned income tax credit, which is a way of essentially subsidizing people's wages, or maybe we should focus more on education. Don't you think those should be higher priorities? And that's a way to kind of take the air out of the support for minimum wage hikes.
For sure. And also, part of this polling included looking at data around maternity and paternity leave, sick leave, things like that. And how did you find those that kind of differed in the polls from the other topics? Was that a little more heated? Was that a starker contrast between business leaders, or was it about the same?
No, so there are similar numbers in that on the question of, do you support policies that increase the amount of paid leave available to families? And so 72%, I think, supported that idea. And part of the issue there, again, is that lots of businesses are offering paid leave to their employees as a perk, as a way to attract people and keep their workforces happy. So it does seem that that's not something that most businesses have a problem with. Now, if you talk to the state chamber leaders, as I did, they will say, well, look, our members, we don't think our membership reflects this poll that the result of the poll that we commissioned. Mm-hmm. But even if they are offering those benefits, they would rather not be required to by the government, because that inevitably comes with restrictions on how exactly you have to offer the benefits and enforcement that creates a bureaucracy and requires taxes. So even if they do those things, they don't necessarily want it to be a government mandate.
To be mandated. And is that generally where the opposition came from, or is that the kind of the loudest in the chorus of opposition, or were there other issues that surfaced too from the opposition?
Well, when you talk to state chamber leaders, I think their job, they usually see their job as keeping government out of their members' business as much as possible. Now, labor market dynamics may dictate a higher level of benefits than are required by government, but for them, that's a competitive advantage. So that's usually the line that they take, even though there are arguments that it's a social good to raise minimum wages and require certain benefits like paid leave. But you know, the whole poll is actually really interesting. There's a lot of surprising things in there. For example, businesses also support the religious freedom laws that have become so contentious in Mississippi and Indiana, which allow them to not serve people who they might disagree with, for example, in gay weddings or gay adoptions. And, you know, it's easy to explain that away because religious freedom sounds very good. It's possible they didn't quite know what those policies meant. But, you know, a lot of surprising stuff surfaced.
Very, very interesting. All right. Well, everybody, head over to WashingtonPost.com and check out the story because there's a lot of really interesting data in there. Lydia, thanks so much for being with us today.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you to news. We're going to check in with our friend Bob Kessler here in just a bit to keep you updated on all the headlines. And when we come back, we're talking about pay equality because that is a thing we're still talking about in 2016. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. My friends, a very important and interesting holiday has just passed us, and that was Pay Equality Day. And if you don't know what that is, it is a day that symbolizes how far into the year women must work to earn what men did on average in the previous year. Because as we have all seen, there's a lot of data that suggests that that women earn about 79 cents for every dollar that men do. And so even though it's 2016, we're still having that conversation. Indeed, we are. So it's an important day, and it's still a very relevant conversation and still something we're thinking a lot about. And so just recently, ChicagoBusiness.com, our good friends over at Cranes, did a really interesting new list about the best places to work in Chicago and the best places for women to work in Chicago. And so here to talk about that is our good friend, Cassie Walker-Burke. Hi, Cassie. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. So talk to us about these lists. What are the great places to work in Chicago?
Sure. So we have two different lists, actually three. So we have a main list of the best places to work in Chicago, a top 10, which we've been doing every year since around 2008. And so that's a really nice mix of companies. The number one company on that list is Digitas, which is an online advertising company. And the second one on the list is Microsoft. And so on that list, you see a really nice mix of different companies, different industries. You see a mix of perks like paid maternity leave, mm-hmm. you know, something that not all companies are offering. Great matches for 401ks, a lot of training for employees, but you also see a lot of at work, you know, communication among a lot of employees. You see people having a buy-in on the missions of the companies. So that's a really great main list. And then our second list are the best places to work for women. And so for that list, we looked at just the responses of female employees at these companies on everything from pay to training to different job responsibility questions to flexibility.
And as you're scoring these companies, are there, you know, I feel like there's the hard metrics of, you know, is the pay competitive? Are the perks good? Are the benefits good? Or is there paid parental leave, things like that? But I think there's kind of the, I don't want to say soft metric because they are equally as important, but the things that are a little bit harder to measure, like civility and workplace culture, where do those factor into these lists?
All of those things factor in. It's funny, you know, we look at everything from quantitative issues such as pay, promotions, healthcare. So quite simply, what percentage of the healthcare costs are employees asked to pick up to hiring practices? And then we also ask things that are a little bit more subjective, so fairness of pay, vacation time, relationships with management and coworkers, because that's a big thing, right? You may work for a great company, but if you and your boss don't have a trusting relationship, you're probably going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Career development, culture, and sort of day-to-day workplace issues. So we look at both the quantitative and then the things that are a little bit more subjective.
I think that's really, really important because, you know, we've talked on this show itself even about companies that have instituted, you know, unlimited parental leave or unlimited vacation, things like that. And yet employees don't take it because the culture is set and kind of the leadership doesn't really walk their talk. And so you can have unlimited vacation, but if you have an office culture where you don't feel like you can take it, that's a whole other story. There's no point of even having it if you feel like you're going to be behind or penalized for taking it.
Exactly. And the companies that tend to do the best on these lists, something I see, you know, here and there is that the CEO, not always, certainly not always, but in some of these companies, the CEO makes it a practice to sort of walk the walk. So to practice the sorts of things that they feel like are important cultural points. So the CEO, for example, of a company called Horizon Pharma, he is a dad. He coaches his kids' sports games. He models flex time, and so therefore his employees feel like it's okay to model flex time, but everybody knows they have to get their work done, they have to meet their deadlines, but I think that is important from the top down to model that behavior.
Definitely is, because I think when, you know, you can say flex time, but if the boss stays super late every night, you're going to feel a little sheepish about leaving it, you know, whatever time you need to leave. I think that's really important. So you mentioned Digitas and Microsoft on the main list of the best places to work. What were some of the places on the best places for women to work?
Well, we divided that list actually into two different sublists. We like lists, okay? So we divided that into the best places to work for women under 35 and the best places to work for women over 35. And so the difference was really that we looked at the employees who were scoring the companies. We looked at sort of the ages they fell into, and that's how we came up with those two lists. So for the younger women, you saw definitely a concentration of tech companies, which would probably not be a surprise. So companies like Spot Hero, Burwood Group is a technology consultant, Stratosphere, which are IT managed services, and Braintree, so that's a payment processing software company. And again, you see some commonalities coming out of these companies that they are good at, they invest a lot in training. They have a lot of cross-departmental assignments, so employees feel like they're learning beyond their skill set. They're working with employees in different areas. Because when you're young and you're in your career, you want to feel like you're getting access to a lot of different parts of a company and learning about different sorts of things and charting your course that way. So that's definitely a commonality. You also saw with these companies open vacation policies, flex time. You know, millennials may be going to school at night to get an MBA. It's not necessarily just women with children who are interested in flex time. And a lot of team building sorts of activities. And then for the list of places for women over 35, that's a different mix of companies. So an insurance brokerage called Assurance, Horizon Pharma, which I already mentioned, which is sort of a specialty pharmaceuticals company, a trade association called CompTIA, Transwestern, which is a commercial real estate services company, and Duane Morris, which is a law firm. It's great to see a law firm on a list like this.
Definitely. And so what other themes would you say that you saw other than, you know, the CEOs and leadership members definitely, you know, walking their talk and a lot of cross-departmental, a lot of a feeling of opportunity and development? Were there any other themes that stood out across all these lists?
You know, it's funny. I often found that with these lists that there were, and especially on the women's list, that there were large percentage or significant percentages, let's say, of women in management. And for the women list in particular, younger women and older women, the people wanted to see women in management. They wanted to see, you know, this is somebody who has worked her way up through this company. This is how she did it. And so I definitely saw that popping up a lot. So 30, 40, 50% of management being female. Another thing I saw were mentoring programs. And so this is across all of the lists. So mentoring programs, but programs that help you navigate the internal politics of an organization and not just have a mentor who's sort of just somebody who's assigned you who checks in every once in a while. Actually, substantial mentoring programs. That was another thing.
That's really interesting. And since Cranes has been doing these lists, as you note, Cranes loves lists and we love Cranes lists, but have there been shifts over time in the trends obviously the different kinds of workplaces, obviously there's a lot more tech firms on there now than there used to be, but have you seen big shifts in maybe cultural attitudes or things like that over time with these lists?
I have, but somewhat slowly. I definitely think that flexibility each year continues to be more something that employees talk about first now and not necessarily third or fourth of what they like about working somewhere. Something else that I'm seeing actually make a return, which I think is interesting, is profit sharing. So there were some years in there where profit sharing wasn't a perk that a lot of companies talked about. And I think that maybe part of that is these tech companies or the smaller startups, that's something that they are using in the hiring, in the talent wars. They're bringing people on with that. So if we do well, you get a percentage of that. But profit sharing seems to be coming back too with some of the old school companies. And so I think that's an interesting perk that we're seeing come back. And also this time around, with the Affordable Care Act being so top of mind for people, you know, we're definitely seeing a shift in healthcare reimbursement. Anybody who anybody who works, it seems like now, you know that oftentimes the percentage of what you're paying in for your health care has gone up over time. That's something that's happening across industries. And so in a lot of these companies, they're still picking up a big percentage of that cost for employees. And so I think that that's a really important it's been a perk, but something that has shifted over time, and these companies realize that.
That is super interesting to consider, too. So if you were to look into your crystal ball and make a guess about what you might see next year on this list, what do you predict we'll see more of or less of?
You know, I think that flexibility is going to continue to be a big issue for people. But I also think that going back to pay, I do think that there is this, you know, we've been talking about pay equity for a long time, but I do think that pay matters. And I think that these companies are going to I think pay is going to be something that we're going to continue to talk about on these women's lists in particular. Mm-hmm. So are the women there paid the industry standard? Do they feel like they're paid the industry standard? I think another thing that we didn't really quite talk about, but I do think this is important and that we'll continue to see more of, are companies encouraging, especially their female employees, to take board assignments, to take giving them time, work time, to go be involved in the community, to be a presence in the community, because that's good for the company, right? It helps them with networking purposes, but it also helps your employees learn more. You know, again, it's about building out that skill set, building up those leadership opportunities, building up their resumes. And so I think you're going to see more of that, that encouragement to be involved that way.
That is a really important one that I think is not discussed often, because that is a bigger issue than I think a lot of people are willing to say, because a lot of times you do have to leave early, or, you know, can't take an email or do something. You know, you have to arrange your schedule around board assignments, and there's a lot to it, and you need to work on it. And yet it is so crucial to professional development and your standing in the community, and there's so many benefits to being on a board. And I think to see the idea of employers acknowledging that more, I think, is really huge, and that would only benefit them, really.
Right, exactly. And especially as you see more women on the senior management level in the C-suites, those are the things that hopefully we'll see more women on boards, right? But but to do that, you have to be able to give them the time to go be involved in that type of service.
Definitely. And I think it'll be interesting to see how pay transparency evolves, too, given that, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen a couple of companies, you know, kind of experimenting with the idea of complete pay transparency, which is interesting. You know, I can see pros and cons to knowing exactly what my colleagues are making, because then you can, you know, you can call shenanigans on, hey, wait a minute, I'm being paid way, way less than somebody who does very little, or, you know, or whatever the case may be. I don't know if that's the answer, but it is interesting to see people experimenting with that, of how to not only deal with pay equality, but the perception of being paid, which was an important thing that you noted. There's the actually being paid what you believe is the industry standard, but then there's also perceiving that. Because I've heard of several circumstances where that's happened, where in fact someone was paid the industry standard, but had the feeling, you know, that she wasn't, and that created just kind of a bad, you know, bad mojo at work just for that.
Exactly. And, you know, going back to one question you asked me, and I realized that this is something that I'm definitely seeing with all the lists right now, with all of the best places to work lists that we did. Companies are starting to also open downtown headquarters. So maybe companies that were previously had a suburban office, so maybe they're operating in Lake Forest. They're starting to open these Chicago satellite offices, which I think is interesting, or move their headquarters downtown in some instances, because they're recognizing that some employees, particularly millennial employees, want to work downtown. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps they're giving them the flexibility to go between offices. So that's another sort of trend, going back to your trend question, actually.
Sure. I could see that being a very big perk, not sitting on the highway early in the morning to commute.
Exactly.
I could see that being a huge benefit. All right. Well, Cassie Walker-Burke, thank you so much for being with us. Always a joy to have you on the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Enjoy your Saturday. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and we come back. More of this fun here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, my friends, a thing has occurred over the last couple of years that I think is really, really interesting. And that is, I think we all recognize that stress is killing us and sitting is killing us. And we need to do more, you know, things that are not looking at screens, and we need to move more. And I think we all know that. But it has been very interesting to watch the rise of adult coloring books, which is very, very interesting. When I first heard of them, I just imagined, when you help your kids or your niece or your nephew, whatever, or your grandkids color in their coloring books. And I just thought, well, I suppose that could be a little therapeutic. But in fact, these are coloring books aimed at adults with really intricate patterns and very beautiful designs. I think there's some that are even a little bit PG-13, with like jokes in them and things like that. So I think that's kind of interesting, but it's really, really a big business. And there's a story in Washington Post that is kind of looks at those numbers, and it is fascinating. There's one company in particular that it writes about in this story, called Blue Star Coloring. And they were this publishing startup that thought, well, we've got a lot of things to do. We'll just kind of put this one adult coloring book up. And it was about stress relieving patterns is what it was called. They put that up in March about a year and a half ago, March 2 years ago. I don't know why I'm saying that. It's April. Duh. Anyway, so about 2 years ago, they put that up thinking it would just be a placeholder, and they only sold like 7 of them. The following month, so April of that same year, sold 15,000 copies. And then by May, the book was at the top of the Amazon best-selling book list. And then in 2015, they sold 1 million copies of some of their adult coloring books, which is crazy to think about. It's a huge, huge business. There's an estimated 12 million books that were sold in 2015 in the adult coloring book realm, which to me says this is a thing we want and like and embrace and that we're all over. Crayola has even responded and launched some coloring accoutrements that are aimed at adults that are not just like those big crayons for tiny hands, but in fact some more sophisticated looking coloring devices, which is super, super interesting to me. I have seen this. I have looked at them. I feel like they're kind of everywhere now. There's even some apps. Griffin, have you seen these apps that they're like coloring, adult coloring apps?
No, I've missed those, I think.
See, I think that kind of misses the point. I saw one and I was like, oh, what is this? And anytime I read about a new app, I'll usually download it and play with it so we can talk about it on the show. But it's a coloring app, but it's not, I think it misses the point because you just go, you select, okay, magenta, and then you touch here and it fills it in on the screen. That's not the point is to not look at a screen.
Right. Well, the story does point out that it's hard to imagine this being a big business a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
But what has propelled it, I think, is partially like the nostalgia of it. It takes people back to childhood in a weird way that you wouldn't expect to be so appealing. But yeah, the app might take away from that part of it, I think. Yeah, it kind of defeats the purpose.
There's a couple of years ago, I had an injury to my eye and I went to the eye doctor and he said, okay, you've got to, you know, you've damaged your cornea a little bit. You need to not look at screens for 48 hours or you're going to, you know, look at some, there's going to be some bigger issues going on with your eyeball. And so I was not allowed to be under a fluorescent light or look at a screen for about 48 hours. And he really emphasized to me, you know, the reason is we're looking at screens, even though it looks like a static screen, it may not be video or moving, it is moving. And if you've ever seen a computer screen on a television, you can see that it is, you know, you see that movement, but otherwise you don't see it. So our eyes are always kind of constantly overcorrecting,
right,
and like always, you know, very tiny movements to correct for that. And so he was explaining by doing that, it'd be like breaking your elbow and then trying to lift weights. Like you're just going to make it worse. And it was really interesting what my brain did in the 48 hours that I was off screens completely. It was really, and I'm the first to be like, quit being technology curmudgeons. I mean, I'm very pro-technology and I'm always the first to kind of roll my eyes and scoff at that. But it was fascinating to me what my brain did with a rest from technology.
And we just got a call from someone who said that she is part of a group that has adult coloring book parties where they all get together and hang out and color in their adult coloring books. So that's another.
That's a thing.
That's a thing.
I'll go to that.
Now we know.
They're doing it at a bar in my neighborhood, too.
Really?
Is that right?
Thursday nights, I think it's called the Rattler is the place in Logan Square where I live. I walked in there to not to do adult coloring books, but there were people who were, and it's an organized event.
I feel like you would start coloring out of the lines more and more. Maybe if you're doing that in a bar.
If you colored out of these lines, you can't drive home. That's what they should do.
That's the test, right.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more to this story. Maybe we'll return to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there is a lot to it. It's interesting. It would be, I mean, I know someone who knits in professional settings. He feels like that's a stress relieving thing, and he makes these very beautiful scarves if he's like at a conference or things like that. And at first, people gave him a lot of grief for that. Like, what are you doing? You're knitting. You're not being respectful to the, you know. But I've talked to him about this many times, and then I met someone else who does the same thing, and who and it's really just about, something to force yourself to make your brain do something else, force other neural pathways to form and force you to look down away from screens from time to time.
Yeah, get you out of, you know, as a culture, we're really in our heads, I think.
Absolutely.
And any kind of embodiment, I think, is really good. I do Legos, actually.
What
if
do
I
you
get Legos.
What do you like build the kits or do you just
I
have
just
a
have
bunch
like
of
one
them?
Kit my sister gave me for Christmas, but sometimes now I find I took it apart, and so when I'm doing other things or I'm getting too much screen time, I just mess around with the Legos and build little things.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm all about the plants. I'm all about gardening and plants and the urban gardening. I've gotten a lot of – I grow a lot of stuff on a tiny balcony, but that's my zen thing. And what I love about it is that you absolutely cannot mess with your screen because you're dirty. You've got you got dirt all over your hands. You can't look at your screen. You can't answer your phone. You and the plants. I think there's a lot of value in just looking at plants and dirt and all that.
We should have a noon show lunch, and it's all stuff we grew. I do that too.
I can just describe my plants.
Kale. No, we bring them in, and we'll, you know.
All right.
You'll eat what you've grown.
I love that.
I grow kale on the balcony during the spring and summer.
Well, we're getting off to such a late start with the growing season this year. Right. I would love to. So far, I only have garlic growing in my windowsill, but I'm happy to share garlic.
Okay.
There's a ton of it. All right, my friends. Cloves for all my friends. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you over to King John and all that good stuff here on 720 WGN.